Kyle, I was telling Barry just a second ago that the normal, like, how you doing and everything, and everything's fine, except I had chicken pox a long time ago, as I'm sure both of you have. And apparently that lays dormant in your body, and you can have this thing called shingles pop out at any
Oh, yeah.
unexpected moment. Yeah, well, I've got it like smack dab in the middle of my forehead.
Oh.
This big red, angry, shingle, itchy, drive me crazy thing. And it looks like I'm growing like a third eye or a
No,
horn
no.
or, yeah. So everything I'm doing, everywhere I'm going right now, not only do I just want to like scratch my face, but when I'm talking to someone, you know how you can just tell they're not really looking at you in the eyes? It's like,
They're
just.
staring at the middle of your forehead. Yes.
Yes. So I don't know. I don't know if you've ever been tempted with an injury or something to put. I don't know. You just might as well just go all in and just put a Band-Aid on it and just write something on there like, "Yes, this is an injury. Get over it," or
Right.
something like that.
Well, for a moment there, I feared you were going to say you might as well go all the way and just put makeup on. And then I was
Well,
going to
no,
exhort
no,
you
no.
not to do that. So.
Actually.
But if it makes you feel better, Austin, there goes every comfortable night's sleep I've ever had in my life. I'm going to be worried now that I'm going to wake up with shingles in the morning.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what can I say, right? I went to the nurse practitioner there's a nurse practitioner, but then there's this nurse practitioner in training, and she's the first one who comes in, and she's like, "Hi, my name's, I don't know, Jane or whatever, and I'm in training, so I'm gonna examine, and then we'll bring in the nurse practitioner and see how it goes." I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's fine." So she's looking at this, this like horn-like thing on my head, and she's asking me all these questions. "Do you have a fever? No. Does it hurt? No, not really." And going through all these things, looking in my ears, and all that kind of stuff. And she's like, "Man, I don't know. This is kind of a tricky one." I'm like, "I know, because I got on the internet, like everybody else does. I'm seeing images of MRSA and, oh, there's staph infection." It's like, oh, I'm always assuming the worst. I'm going to have this gaping Ebola wound in my head or something. And it's like, well, none of these things seem to be matching anyway. So anyway, she leaves. The nurse practitioner comes
So
in.
you had no idea at this point what it was.
No, I kept trying. I had my dad look at it, different people. What I thought it was is from my hat. I have this, which, okay, confession here. So I've got, obviously I'm a mailman, and you have postal hats. I never wash my postal hat. I just keep them for a year and then just get a new one. But it hasn't been an issue for like 20 years. But I'm thinking it's right where the band would be at. I'm sweating a lot. I'm thinking, okay, some kind of nasty bacteria thing got on my head. I'm doing rubbing alcohol on it and like this 4-year-old little tube of Walgreens triple antibiotic, and nothing's helping. So anyway, I finally go to the No, to answer your question, no, I had no idea what it was. So anyway, the nurse practitioner comes in, and she's like, she looks at it for a second. She goes, "It looks just like this spider bite we saw yesterday." I don't think it's a spider bite. I mean, I would have noticed a spider like biting my face.
Right. Did they give you any indication like this looks like a brown recluse bite? Did you start to think that your skin was
Well,
just
no, but
decaying?
that's right. That's what I'm thinking, because it kind of has a little. I mean, not to be too graphic, but yeah, there's definitely some issues with it. I mean, I wouldn't call it flesh eating, but that's, in my mind, that's kind of how I think of it. Because you can't see it either. That's always worse when it's like, if it's on your arm, you can look down at it, but I have to like obsess in a mirror,
Right.
I feel like an idiot. So the imagination runs wild. Well, anyway, she's like, "Well, it looks like she's talking to this other Jane lady, and but she's like, but it's not the spider bite. I know what it is." Oh. "You know what it is?" "Yeah." Does she's like, "Does the right side of your face hurt?" "Actually, it does. It hurts." "And does it only itch on the right side of your head and your face?" "Yeah, horribly." "Oh yeah, that's shingles. That's classic shingles." "What? Shingles?" So, yeah, little did I know that this thing just lays in you dormant, just waiting to pop out on your forehead and make you look like a freak show at any moment in your life. So, yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's... What do your kids think? Are they disgusted by dad?
Yeah, I mean, of course, yeah. Everybody just kind of makes fun of me, you know, not only because I'm constantly like, what is this thing on my forehead? But, you know, the whole third eye thing, I don't know. There's this character off of Dota 2. It's like an online game where there's this dude who has like this big red gem set into his forehead. And my oldest son, you know, gives me this picture, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. Right.
Have they come up with any cute little songs for you or anything? Like,
no, right. No songs. No,
you ever heard Rex Ungerich's song "Leprosy" put to the tune of the Beatles' song "Tomorrow"? Leprosy, no. All my skin keeps falling off, or something like that.
No, I have. Is this? Could I YouTube this?
Thing? You could YouTube it. Just don't give your kids any ideas. Next thing you know, they're gonna be running around the house yelling, you know, "Shingle bells, dad spells" or something. So
yeah. Well, okay, so, you know, my thing is, well, what do I do? And she's like, well, there's this window of, I think she said 24 to 72 hours, where if you see it developing, you can take this antiviral stuff. Believe it or not, it's like an anti-herpy medicine. So I'm like, well, that's encouraging. She's like, well, but you're past that window, so you can't, you're just going to have to deal with it.
So how long have you had this thing?
Since last Wednesday.
And how big is it, actually?
I mean,
like the size of a quarter or
the size of a quarter. And then there's a little bit off to the side, but that's more like a line of it, almost like a scratch. So yeah, it's about the size of a quarter, but it was sticking out at one point, probably like 3 or 4 quarters stacked up. It was, that's why it was like, okay, don't mind me, I'm just gonna be like a wild boar rooting around in my food, you know, with my tusk.
Well, it would provide a very interesting object lesson for your family, you know, relating to those in the Old Testament who are ceremonially unclean. I think I'd make you eat at a different dinner table, walk on the other side of the hallway, yell unclean everywhere you go, and I think it could be very powerful for your children.
Well, so am I going to have to, like, turn on the webcam here and you guys are priests examining the hair on it or something?
We got to decide if you're truly clean yet or not, so...
Well, yeah. Anyway, and
I really think this should, instead of our first podcast, it really should have been a video cast. But
yeah, well, I'm glad I don't even have that.
Let the world see Austin's deformity. I like this. This is going places.
Right, could like you at least take a picture, like, and you know, have it as a link down below?
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me see how hard this would be.
No, you don't really. You don't have to do this.
No, I was gonna send you a picture right now. Oh. Let me see how hard this would be, just real quick. So I'll zoom in. Oh, this is scary. Okay. So let's. Let me see if I can send this to you. Okay. So there's that.
Let the record reflect that Barry's the one that asked for a picture.
Yeah, okay. I'll spare you, Kyle.
I don't know what Barry's weird fascination with this is, but...
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, you look through those medical books, see all those pictures of people who've suffered. I remember when I was teaching an Old Testament survey class on the book of Job, and I wanted the students in the class to know what the boils look like, and so I found these pictures with these poor people with boils all over their faces just to help them to understand. Oh, my. Oh, man.
You can never undo that. That's terrible. So,
did it go through?
Yeah, it's huge, Austin.
Yeah, well, and it's actually a lot better. The last couple days, it's way, way down. It was, like, really big and angry.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like you could have hit your...
Yeah, that's what most people think. They think I'm, like, a drunken fool and fell on my face or something.
It's slightly off-center. It's more toward your right eye.
Yeah, that makes me feel a lot better. Thank you.
That's the response everybody wants, right? It's huge, Austin!
That is as bad as I thought.
Yeah. On second thought, let's not put this on the
This is just disgusting. We can't do this.
Yeah. I'm sorry to have subjected you to that.
You have my pity. You have.
Yeah, I don't even care about that right now. It's just the incessant itching that I feel like doing to my head. It's just really, really crazy. But, yeah, anyway. Well, I think we ought to talk about something else now.
I would concur.
So, okay, I think we do need to talk about podcast name. And I haven't heard back from you, Kyle. I think Barry and I are having a little bit of a, I wouldn't say disagreement, that's too strong of a word. And I wouldn't even say like a standoff, that's way too strong of a word. But it's not bad. I mean, it's pretty good. I haven't had anything that makes me want to do cartwheels yet. But, you know, 3GT, Three Guys Theologizing, or the one I'm, I guess, mildly favorable of is Theology Meet Life. What are your thoughts?
Well, my family's having a hard time even picking a name for our next baby, let alone a podcast. But to be candid, would there be any play on words with the Theology Meet Life? Would it just be spelled the? How would you spell meet? Would it be M-E-A-T or would it be M-E-E-T?
Yeah. No, it's not like roast beef. It's theology, comma. M-E-E-T, life. Like, oh. Hey, life.
Well, I thought maybe we wanted to sit down and talk about bacon or something, or no. Steak I had last night. But, you know, Barry's suggestion is very close to what I would think of, at least for the abbreviation of Together for the Gospel, the 3GT, which, as far as acronyms go, would get a little confusing.
So you're leaning that way then?
Which way?
3GT.
What I like about 3GT is it's got a quick, easy acronym, right? 3GT. Yeah. And then it's, you know, that's something easy to promote. It's something easy to keep in mind. Theology Meet Life. TML just doesn't really have the flow that 3GT does.
A little too close to TMI, yeah, huh?
That's right.
So do you have any suggestions, or are you just a critic?
I'm just a critic. And a
okay, so. All right.
Can you hear any of our other ideas, Austin? We had like...
The worst...
The worst one
was called Showerhead Theology. and you're like, why Showerhead? Because the idea was... I'm going to blame this totally on Barry. He came up with this one. But the idea was this, oh, you're in the shower, you know, and sometimes you're just thinking and ideas come to you, so it's Showerhead Theology. But, you know, I don't know if you want to, like, cause people to think about, you know, us thinking in the shower. I don't know. That's probably not the image we're going for.
That's what quickly dissuaded me of that choice.
I mean, if that is, you know, if that's what is ultimately decided to go on, we may need to rate the podcast MA.
We might have
to throw some parental advisories up here, which would not be a good thing. So
yeah. Well, okay. So here's just some of the other names that we tossed around. The Ology of Life. Ooh, see, you get that?
Oh yeah.
Theology spit. Oh, then that's catchy there. The Ology of Life. Theologification, 38.3% theology, the theologian's beard, the theologian's hammock, and my personal favorite one is a professor, a pastor, and a mailman walk into a bar. So,
what was the consensus on the ology of life?
Well, I don't know. Is that one catching you a little bit?
I like it. That one did catch me.
The ology of life.
What does it mean?
Well, Barry, this is existential. You need to go beyond what it looks like and find your own inner meaning for it.
Well, I guess it would be the study of life, right?
Right.
But it's just taken the word theology and split it, so it's like the study of life with a theological bent. I guess that would be the idea. Man. Does that make sense? I don't know.
So would it have the acronym TOOL? T-O-O-L.
Now that, Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you'd have to stay away from that.
I mean, we don't have to have an acronym.
No, that because that would be a bad one.
You know, I like three guys theologizing if the primary focus of what we do here will be found primarily in speaking about theology. But if we're going to go wider and talk about things like Austin's horn on his head, the ology of life, you know, yeah, there's a bent towards theology, but it's just bringing up things from everyday life, studying every day, which is why the ology of life stuck out to me a little more. But it maybe depends on where our program will go and what we will primarily be focusing on. So
yeah,
we could call it the evolution of a podcast.
There you go. Just like here is the honest appraisal. Yeah. Well, yeah. And maybe this might be a case where we have to cast lots or something. I mean, who knows, but I'm not opposed to 3GT. I like the simplicity of it. That definitely is appealing to me. So, well, okay. Well, let me ask this then. Here's what I'm curious about. You know, what are other podcasts that you guys are familiar with and you just think, man, that is like a home run title, and why? You know, and okay, one of the ones, and I'll start it off. One of the ones that obviously is just like, wow, you got to be kidding me, was, we've talked about this before, but Hello Internet. I mean, right? Super simple, and it has the wonderful advantage of just being high, right? I mean, how smart is that? That's just disgustingly smart and really catchy. And I wish we had that first.
I think I've listened to that several times, and I think you sound like the main guy. Well, there's two guys on there, but CGP Gray. I just think
I don't know how. Yeah, you know what? My wife listened to it, and she was like, Yeah, you definitely, it reminds me. I don't see it myself, but she's like, no, it's definitely there. The whole, you know, something even more like the way he looks at life, I guess, even. But I don't know. I don't see it, Barry.
Did you notice that at all, Kyle?
I probably have not listened to it enough to be able to notice that just yet. So
okay.
Well, just the intonations and perspectives and sort of defining things more fully, and the types of things that reminded me of you.
I guess why I'm hesitant to want to do that, I mean, don't get me wrong, CGP Gray seems like a nice, great guy. I'd like to meet him, but he does make me think a little bit like he's more robotic or something. Like his mind is definitely like information in, you know,
right.
Information out. This is the right thing to do, you know. And I don't know. I don't know that I am that, but I don't know, whatever. You could tell I'm feeling disappointed.
But we're talking about titles particularly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what's one you think that is just right on, Barry?
Well, I don't listen. You're the podcast man between the three of us. So my podcasting, although I'm starting to expand a little bit, given my commute, is mostly listening to sermons and things of that nature. But another one that I've enjoyed is listening to is Radiolab.
That one's good.
They tell a story and usually has some unique perspective on it. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like really high quality too. Yeah. They, not only are they really talented, but man, I imagine there's a pretty good budget there as well.
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. No, and that's like the perfect, in terms of titles, yeah, that's a home run, right? Like Radiolab. Yes, of course.
Short and sweet.
Makes, and you know what the other thing I noticed is it just me, or does really popular things have two syllables? Like, okay, follow me here. Radiolab, Hello Internet. Like The Briefing.
Wait, two syllables. Those all have three or four.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I can count. Wait, The Briefing, Hello. Yeah, Hello. Yeah, what the heck?
Radio Lab, that's three syllables.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, because I guess what I was thinking is in my mind is like internet stuff. Like, it seems, well, okay, let me expand it. It seems like it's always just two or three. You think of Amazon, eBay, Twitter. It seems like if anybody goes too far, It's almost like the, it's like, no, too much, getting worn out. We're not going to be interested in this. You know what I mean?
Although you know that you're arguing against your own titles then.
Yeah, I know. I know. And actually that's okay. Yes, I take back everything I said.
That was a fruitful discussion.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed watching that one unfold. So,
yeah, not only can I not count, but I wasn't reflective enough on my theology meet life. How many is that? Help me out here.
17. Yeah, that's the way you count.
And the ology of life. Yeah, that's So yours, Barry,
if it hits that criteria.
With the abbreviation, it hits the criteria.
That's how I want it. I mean, I don't want to just 3GT. We don't even have to over explain it.
Yeah. Now, okay. So my question is, Kyla, do you listen to podcasts much?
I don't listen to podcasts much. There's probably one that I try to listen to on a somewhat consistent basis.
Which
would be the Mortification of Spin and Bully Pulpit with Amy Bird, Carl Truman, and Todd Pruitt. And I think whenever they introduce it, you know, this is the Bully Pulpit. I actually think it's a very witty name because it does a wonderful job catching the personality of the podcast as a whole. It's not just conveying what we're doing. Like, it's the personality, and he's got the English wit, Carl Truman does, that comes up. But that's probably the only one I listen to with any consistency. So
yeah,
that's the thing too that you know we don't have going for us is we don't have anyone with that catchy accent. You know.
Yeah, that's true. That is a real downer.
Kyle, you need to start working on that.
I'll do my best.
Yeah.
You know, actually, well, now that you bring it up, this is one of the reasons why I am prone not to listen to many people, whether it's podcasts or sermons, because
really?
I find that subconsciously I begin to imitate. And so
really?
When we first got married, Rachel would be appalled because I still am, but I would listen to a lot of Sinclair Ferguson sermons. And the next thing you know, I want to be preaching and talking in this Scottish accent. And she just used to think it was ridiculous. Or, for instance, especially with very vibrant, dynamic preachers, John Piper is another one. That if I happen to listen to his sermons, the next thing you know, I'm going to be all hedonist and I'm going to be making the same inflections. And so, because of that, I've actually had to monitor closely what I do and don't listen to. So,
right. Yeah, everything becomes white hot.
Yes. The white hot center.
Right. So, okay. So you have like you're like a chameleon then. You just.
Yeah, exactly.
More like a mockingbird.
There we go. Thank you. That would be more apt. So.
More. Now, okay, so now, because see, I was going to follow up with, it's kind of one of my missions in life to get people to listen to more stuff. It's like, why aren't you listening to more podcasts, loser? You know, that's kind of my default position. So now, Kyle, that's a pretty legitimate reason. I don't want you to be, I mean, there can only be one Ferguson, right?
That's right.
But wouldn't the antidote to that to be just to diversify so much that, I mean, you couldn't just copy one then?
Well, can you imagine the difficulty that would be for my congregation? I'd go up there and have like split personality. You know, point number one, I'm John Piper. Point number two, I'm Sinclair Ferguson. Point number three, I'm trying to copy the English wit of Carl Truman. I think it'd be disastrous. So
I don't know. I'd kind of like to see that. So. Now, I think I've had a little bit of influence on you, haven't I, Barry, with listening to podcasts?
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant trying to imitate you.
No. No, I mean, with listening. I mean, because you have a commute. How far is your commute?
Well, it can be 45 minutes, but it can be a lot longer, depending on the spring traffic.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good. That just is the ideal time to
right.
To listen to. But you probably don't have a commute at all, do you, Kyle?
depends. Sunday morning, my commute is about 7 steps to the front door of the church. So.
Now, and I don't suppose the people in your city commute far, do they?
Actually, the people in our town, we've, not to give you the whole sociology of Winchester, but it's become a bit of a bedroom community. So we're about an hour from Kansas City, an hour from Topeka, and an hour from Lawrence, Kansas. And so you actually do have quite a few commuters who are going to the bigger areas but enjoy the small rural life for family living.
Yeah. Now, when you say small rural life, what are you talking?
Oh, I'm talking like our town is smaller than some churches. So we've got 613 people in Winchester.
613.
Yes. But when our baby's born this coming October, that will raise the population to 614. So.
Yes, that's a significant increase.
Like, everybody makes a difference. So.
Oh man. So, okay. Now I live in a small town, but not obviously that small, and so. I don't know. Paint this picture for me. Like, help me. I really have no idea where even Winchester's at. Okay, what would be the next nearest city? What is the next nearest one?
Topeka or Kansas City would probably be the next.
Oh, so like an hour away.
Yeah. I mean, we've got, you know, so we're in a county, and there's other towns in our county, but none of them exceed a population of 3,000.
Okay, so surely there's another town then closer than.
Yeah, Atchison, Kansas. Which is about 35 minutes away, has several thousand people. That would be considered going to town.
Okay, I gotcha.
The big question is, Kyle, do they have a Walmart?
Yeah, Atchison has a Walmart. So okay. We are within 30 minutes of a Walmart.
Wow. Okay, 13 people. You have a grocery store?
A what?
Or do you go like gather, you know, berries out in the woods or something? What do you have there?
Well, we've got a gas station next door, which okay. I guess can count as a grocery store. We go there to get candy. But so beyond that, we have a local diner and a local library. And
oh, you have a library.
We actually have a guy who does auto sales and restoration in town. And beyond that, however, the only other thing we boast of is a gun and rock store. So mixing two passionate loves, apparently. Guns and rocks.
I don't understand. So firearms.
Firearms, yeah.
And rocks is in terms of you pick up a rock off the beach.
Yeah, as in, you know, these are...
Austin, there's no beaches in Kansas.
Well, that's true. Okay, so you pick it off.
You said your geography wasn't very good, but...
Yeah.
The kinds of rocks that geologists are interested in. Apparently, people come from all over the state to come visit our rock store. So
is it like geodes?
You know, I know a lot of arrowheads from when I was in there. And I'm trying to think. I was more interested in the firearms when I went, when I do go, than I actually am in the rocks. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is there any way that those two worlds collide? Like, is there slingshots?
You know, I think that's a good marketing venture. I think I'll encourage the owner the next time I'm in to maybe consider that.
So like, okay, it sounds like I'm being condescending, and I'm really not. I'm just genuinely fascinated. This is a pretty small area. I mean, so do you feel like, how many of the 613 people do you feel like you know by at least sight?
Well, let's see here. There's four people other than me and my family, so I'd say four. No, how many do I know by sight? I would know, so far, since we've only been here for 2 years, so cut me a little bit of slack. I would probably know 100 people, maybe discounting some of our church people within town, and getting to know more and more. Our children being involved in summer league sports is very helpful to that end. So,
So help me picture this in my mind. I mean, are the houses all pretty much together? Or are they really scattered out all over across a fairly large area?
They're very close together.
Okay. All right.
So I would assume, I've never taken the total measurement, but Winchester is probably half a mile long by half a mile wide, if even that.
Oh, so not very, okay. So yeah, really compact.
So basically from my front step, if it weren't for a slight hill down the main road there, I could see from, we're on the very north end of town. Our backyard opens into the cornfields. So we're the furthermost, one of the furthermost houses in town. And looking south, I can see to the end of our town from my front step. So,
okay. I am bringing up, as we speak, it's Winchester, Kansas.
That's right.
Okay. Let me see here. Okay. I'm doing Google Street View. Let's see. I'm looking at the post office. That is an interest to me. Oh, I can do Street View and head to the post office. Okay, let me see here.
It's an ideal place for a postman.
Well, it would be if they had any routes, but we're all pretty much rural routes. So we have to actually, we're still so old, we've got to walk to the post office to our P.O. box to get our mail every day.
Oh. Okay. Now, I'm looking at right now a place called Jay's Place.
Yeah, that's our local diner.
That's the local diner. Yep. Okay. Because it says cafe. It's got a Pepsi sign there.
Yes.
I'm heading up the street and I see, there's the Tire and Lube. And what's this right here? The Winchester Fire Department.
Yeah.
Okay.
All volunteer, of course.
And we have, now what's this? Psyka Designs?
Oh, they recently closed down. So that was just a little design place that somebody in town owned. They'd make t-shirts and little crafts.
Yeah, because it's almost like a shed of a house.
Yes, it is.
It is very small.
It's called Psyka Designs.
Psyka Designs, and yeah, here's
it. That's where you see names are important.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I just can't think of a name of a business called that in Winchester succeeding.
Yeah, well, and it definitely looked a little psychedelic. Ooh, Aunt Sadie's Quilt Shop.
There we go. That's a good name.
Yes.
That's a really good name. And then there's, what is this? Sedlak Agency?
Sedlak Agency. So Dan Sedlak is a family inherited business. They used to do insurance. Now he kind of does real estate. Dan's a good friend of mine. But I don't know. He probably doesn't do a ton of real estate anymore.
Okay. All right. Well, this looks like a nice little community.
It really is.
It looks very quaint. Very, very quaint. So tell me, describe like a day just hanging out in the town. Do you like walk around or you ride your bike around or what do you do?
Yeah, well, you know, we enjoy going for family walks. We've got a 2.5 mile loop that we do up and down different streets just to say hi to people. We get the opportunity, like I said, to walk to our post office on a daily basis to pick up both our mail and the church's mail. Especially in the fall, we enjoy going to the football games. So we have the high school in our town, and then the elementary school is located about 10 miles away in another town within our county. But we enjoy getting around to those, and I try to frequent the diner a couple times a month. Partly because just to help the local business, but we have a meat packing plant in town as well. A little family.
No, I saw that. I saw that. Yeah.
Yes. And the diner gets all their bacon from them, which means it's top notch great bacon. So that's my excuse for going over there. So,
oh man. Yeah. That sounds pretty good.
There's a local park. We take the kids to the park and play on the playground equipment. So,
Kyle, yeah. tell Austin about your dog.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Austin, you asked me how many people in town I probably recognize by face, but that pales in comparison to our dog. So our dog has become the community dog, known by most as being the community dog. So when we were in Grand Rapids, when we first bought our house, our housewarming present to ourselves was a Golden Retriever Beagle mix.
Beagle mix.
Yeah, Golden Retriever Beagle mix. So he's stumpy and short to the ground. He has short hair like a beagle, but he looks like a Golden Retriever. So
wow. Okay.
It's a very interesting mix.
Gonna have to Google that, but okay. So keep going.
So we got him and his name is Huckleberry. And Huckleberry had a miserable life in Grand Rapids because he was confined to a fenced-in backyard at all times of the day. And we moved here where there are no fences, and he got to know the community quite quickly. So we eventually just kind of let him get off his leash, and he would just start walking around town. And he started to make all kinds of friends. So his morning routine, I'll give you his morning routine, we would wake up and we'd let him outside, and he would take a stroll to the meatpacking plant, and he would stand at the door, and they'd come and greet him, and then they'd give him all their leftovers. So they would give him the bones and the meat, and it's not an uncommon sight to see Huckleberry walking down the road with a spinal cord hanging out. But so he would make his rounds there.
A spinal cord just dangling now. You're okay.
It's quite the sight. So, and then he goes over to the local diner because the farmers gather there for coffee in the morning. And he sits outside and they all talk to him and see what animal carcass he's carrying for the day. And it has turned into the highlight of their morning. Many of them have commented to me how much they love seeing Huckleberry come victoriously with bones in his mouth. And then his favorite place to hang out has actually become the local gas station, where he sits by the front door and just says hi to – he lays down there all day long, says hi to people as they come in and out, and he stays there until the gas station closes at 10 o'clock, and he escorts the closing employee, who's usually a woman, out to the alley to dump the garbage, and she always says how safe she feels with him next to her. And then he comes waltzing home, and we let him in, and he spends the night with us, and the next morning he goes out and starts his journey. Go ahead.
So he just does his thing all day.
Yeah, he just roams around, at first we were feeling a little bad, like, oh, everybody's going to know there's the new pastor and his family and their runaway dog.
Yeah, right.
You know, we began to hear things around the community about how much people loved our dog. And one day we noticed how bad it was getting when somehow somebody came running over to our house and they said, "Hey, did you hear your dog is on Facebook?" We were like, "What?" And somebody had posted a picture of him that is not friends with my wife or I, and posted the caption, "I have no idea whose dog this is, but I love seeing him every day. It's the highlight of my week."
The highlight?
The
wow.
Highlight of the week. So
he started a celebrity dog.
Yeah, and we quickly found when the weather warmed up and we started taking walks, we'd be walking by people's houses and they'd come out and they'd say, "We know that dog. How are you doing, Huckleberry?" And so he's become somewhat of a celebrity. But the latest news, and Barry, I don't know if I caught you up on this, the latest news was that our mayor was recently fined for having her dog off a leash, and it's a $25 fine. So word starts to get around that she's a little unhappy that she got fined when there's all kinds of other dogs running around. So Rachel and I decided, well, maybe just for the time being, we should start tying Huckleberry up again. So we did. And all these people kept asking us, you know, what happened? Where is he? And, you know, we were kind of feeling bad. And we didn't want to throw anybody under the bus, but we did. And we were like, "Hey, talk to the mayor. The mayor is not happy, and we don't want to get fined." Well, about 3 weeks ago now, Winchester has a local police officer who works about 40 hours a month. He's a retired guy, but he's willing to do some patrolling. He stopped by and was talking to my wife, and he said, "By the way, where's Huckleberry been?" And Rachel was like, "Well, you know, we're a little worried that we might get fined. You know, we know that we're not supposed to have him off a leash." And the cop started laughing. And he was like, "I'm the only one in this town with the power to ticket anybody. And I'm not ticketing you for Huckleberry." So we're like, "Okay, well, back by popular demand, we'll let Huckleberry run around again." So
was the mayor's dog, did it happen to be a pit bull?
No, it wasn't. Our neighbor's dog is a pit bull who wanders around, but no.
Oh, well, that's
a pit bull. I'm not totally sure why the neighbor's dog got fined. So those are the politics of small town living I stay out of.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like there's packs of roaming dogs in Winchester, and
there kind of are.
And there's, it sounds like it's a good thing there's P.O. boxes, because
Austin.
Yeah, that's
well, where mailmen fear to tread.
So. Yeah, where mailmen fear to
there
tread.
There we go. How's that for a title for our podcast?
Where mailmen fear to tread. I like that. Well, because it's like, what are those called? They're called, the word's escaping me. Is it free range chickens?
Yes.
Is that what they call those? So you have like free range moocher dogs?
That's pretty much what we have, yeah.
Hmm.
So Kyle, does he have his own Facebook page yet?
No, we thought about it, but we haven't started it yet. Yeah. So,
Huckleberry.
Has this given you like evangelistic opportunities?
It really, you know, if not evangelistic, it is helping us just to be more accommodating to the community. Because really, when we're out for walks, you know, adults come up to us and, oh, is Huckleberry your dog? Well, yep, he is. And children love him. They come up and give him hugs. And you know, it starts to get us to be able to interact with the community a little bit, and they really appreciate him. I've wanted to actually put a camera on his collar and just see what a day in the life of Huckleberry looks like.
Oh, I you should totally, seriously, you need to get one of those little Go Cams or whatever they're called. Put it on your dog, set up a little Facebook page, a day in the life of Huckleberry, you know, and just see what happens. I mean, who knows, right?
There we That'd go, be pretty right. cool.
I like it. That's pretty, yeah, I'm all for it. All right. Is this a good point to transition to something totally different?
Yes. Sure.
So, I'm just curious. I'm holding in my hand. If I had the webcam on, you could see this. But it's a big kind of greenish tan 2-volume The Works of Jonathan Edwards. You guys probably have something like that, I would suspect.
Yes.
It's very large, and the print is probably like font size 6 or something like that. It's, you can't even really begin to read it, but it's there. You can see it.
Yeah, those are the ones that Gerstner used to, he would say if you would read it in a year, he'd give it to you for free.
Yeah, okay.
Gerstner challenge.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, no doubt. Well, anyway, I was, besides all the squinting and eye damage that inevitably follows, I do like
Edwards. I wonder if Edwards that's really why your shingles broke out where they did.
Yeah, right. Just, yeah. Well, okay. Well, some of the questions I'm about to give you.
You had your forehead scrunched so hard that.
Yeah, it was. All right. Anyway, I was flipping around in the back, and there's this really curious page in the back, 2 pages, in the very back of volume 1. And it's called Theological Questions. Have you guys ever looked at this? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
You do know? Okay. Are these, okay, well, let me ask you, because I don't know. Are these, there's like 90 questions that cover the whole range of things. Are these questions for perspective pastoral candidates or something like that? I mean, what are these questions for? Do you know?
I don't know why their presence is there.
I don't know. Is there an editor's introduction at all? Or
nothing. It is just, no. It is just like 2 pages of, that's all it is. It says theological questions, really big at the top. And then it's just a bunch of questions, like 90 questions. And in some of these questions, I mean, some of them are really straightforward, like, number 65 is like, what is the essence of true virtue or holiness? Okay, something like that. That's pretty straightforward. Or like 39, how does it appear that human nature is originally depraved? Questions on original sin, you know, these kinds of things. But I'm thinking, okay, if you were to be asked one of these questions on the hot seat, and that's where I'm going with this, because I'm kind of curious about, you know, both of you have been on the hot seat with examination. Were you asked any questions like this? Here's question number 2, okay? So it's like, oh, you're sitting there, you're all ready, and here comes question number 2. How does it appear that the earth and the visible system are not from eternity? Okay, like, okay. Or number 4, how do you prove the natural perfections of God? namely his intelligence, infinite power, foreknowledge, and immutability. Oh, okay. How do I prove the natural perfections? Okay. Number 11. Whence arose the Manichaean notion of two gods, and how is it confuted? The Manichaean notion of two gods? What is that? I have no idea what that even is. Is that like something that Augustine like believed in at some time or something, or Aristotle?
You're on the right track.
It seems like I've heard of Manichaean ethics, but anyway, I didn't know there was two gods. But so I guess my question is, when you guys, I'm not even really familiar. I mean, both of you, it's been different time frames for you, but both of you you're sat down for your ordination questions, right? Your examination. And you've got like how many people sitting around you? I mean, is it like two people, three people, 15 people? What, like how many people are present at something like this?
Well, it's usually a gathering of presbytery.
Okay.
I mean, they can sometimes delegate it to a commission or a smaller body, but often it's the full body of presbytery, which, of course, depending on the size of the presbytery, but Kyle and I were both examined in the same one, and it would have been, well, probably my time was a little smaller. It had been more like 30 to 40. I think it's a little more when Kyle was going through.
Yeah.
So both of you had about 30 to 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this with my own eyes. So Kyle, paint the picture here. You're just like, I imagine that you're sitting in some kind of like chair somewhere, and there's a semi half circle of people. Are there like arms crossed just waiting to nail you?
Not totally like that. You know, one of the things, and it differs from place to place. I took some systematic theology exams with the Orthodox Presbyterian Church before actually coming into the RPCNA. And so even between those two, there were some differences. But even within different presbyteries in the RPCNA, it is slightly different. But the general feel of it all is nobody's out to try to make you look bad. Well, there might be a couple individuals that are going to... But the general feel of it, hopefully, if it's being carried out in a sanctified way, is nobody's trying to make you look bad. They just want sufficient answers to show you're competent in theology. I might be a glutton for punishment, okay, but I actually found the theology exams to just be super fun.
Really?
It was the other exams I was more worried about.
There's more exams?
Yeah, so in order to be ordained, at least in the RPCNA, Barry can correct me, but off the top of my head, I think there's 11 different exams throughout your time that you're actually are given. You're given theology multiple times. You have church history. You have personal godliness. You've got pastoral gifts and evangelism, things like that. So the theology exams were actually my favorite. It was the church history one where I was sweating bullets. But you know, you just kind of sit in front. They usually take the pulpit down. It's usually in a sanctuary, and the pews are filled with men and who are looking to just make sure you're competent in the doctrine of the church. So it was a little nerve-wracking. The first person to administer my theology exams to me in the RPCNA was Frank Smith, and I think it was an act of mercy that I had no idea who he was before he gave me his exams. The guy's got like two PhDs and is very well learned, but I was oblivious to that when he went to give me my exam. But maybe Barry has a different experience.
No, that's a good recounting. I would agree with you that there are some presbyters, they're not so much trying to make you look bad, but maybe make themselves look good. And the questions they ask, but
right. That's
beside
from whence comes the notion, the Manichaean notion of two gods, you know, that does sound pretty smarty pants, doesn't it? Yeah, and I obviously I don't think that people are out to just to get you, but I doubt you were like, right now I'm making a motion with my hands, like bring it on. I doubt you were like that, but you just found it, you still found it kind of enjoyable though.
I found it enjoyable. You know, I was nervous. I probably over-prepared. I remember for my ordination exams, Shane Sapp from Westminster in Colorado was the one giving me my exams. And the night before, we were out and we were talking about theology. And we got onto the topic, if this makes sense, on the imputation of Adam's sin and whether that was immediately or immediately imputed to us. And then he started making jokes about how I better have my answer down because he was going to ask me the next day to biblically defend my position.
Oh, that was nice.
And John Murray wrote a book on this that makes so little sense to me. I've read it a few times and I still just think, what language are you writing in here? So, there was a part of me that was really nervous. Oh, no. Am I going to get one of these very big curveballs where not everybody is even necessarily agreed on the answer? But thankfully that didn't materialize. So.
Yeah. So Barry, how did you feel?
I agree with Kyle a lot. I was still pretty young. I should say, well, young, but also new to the Reformed faith. I was still really getting acclimated to the church and all when I started going through my exam. So I would say I was a lot more anxious about it all. But I too would prefer a theology exam or something that's more biblically based to like a church history exam where you're taking thousands of years and trying to remember all these details and facts. And I remember just going through, and there are times I was coached, if you don't know, don't try to act like you know. Just say, I haven't studied that, or I don't know how to answer that question. And I found the men would often use the time following the exam, if I had shown a hole, to give me instruction, tell me where to go to study. And so I saw it as just part of my growing process as well. And I've always tried to remember that now that I'm on the other end of it administering the exams. It's a time to instruct men and sharpen them as well as examine them.
I mean, I can't help but ask, have you ever seen personally a situation where someone doesn't pass?
Yes.
You have? Yep. Okay.
Just recently, actually.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And did you feel, is it because there's something really just one area in particular that's really egregious, or just a general, there's just a general deficiency maybe in preparedness? Which way does it usually go?
Sometimes it has to do with a man's gifts. Like, I've seen men who have all the character qualities of an elder, which I tend to think we need to be focusing a great deal upon. But in presbytery exams, it's often much more their theological acumen. And again, I'm not saying they shouldn't have, good theological base, but some men, you could tell they were great at evangelism, discipleship, but when it came to articulating the finer points of theology, they would struggle. And so I've seen men fail in that regard and have to come back and take an exam again.
What about you, Kyle?
Yeah, the one specific example that I really remember, as far as a total failure went, it was the way in which the man held his theology, which was not reflective of a pastoral heart. And that's what, they're looking for too, and you're mindful of that sitting in the hot seat, that they're not only looking for book responses, but they're looking for, how are you going to deal with a congregation? How are you going to deal with individuals who may disagree with you? And this particular individual took a very hardline stance on something. And when specifically asked, pastorally walk us through it, he was unable to do that. And so there was obviously a lack of gifting there. But the other areas, there have been more specific as well. The one that I see cause concern usually with presbyters is questions on the doctrine of the Trinity. If you can't really give a defense and an explanation, of course, it's a doctrine we'll never comprehend, but we can apprehend a little bit of it. But if you're not even able to really work through what do we mean by one God in essence, but three in persons. And, you know, there's been red flags that have been thrown up. I've never seen anybody failed overall on that. I've seen people not sustained by one or more individuals. Or I've seen people say, you need to come back again, but here's some books you need to read before then, and we're going to ask you more clearly on these types of issues. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I don't know, this is kind of a weird question, but it just comes to me right now. So on a scale of 1 to 10, given the current system that you've seen, how good is it? Like in your minds, like, I would like to see something like this change or this added or this tweaked. I mean, is the process, you feel like, nah, this is really nailed down. This is the right way to do it.
I defer to Barry for the moment.
Ah, okay, chicken.
Yeah. Oh, I would put it up high. I mean, yeah. I put around an 8 or a 9.
Okay, good.
The system's perfect, but I do love the fact that in the Presbyterian form of government, that it's not just a local congregation or a small group deciding, but for the protection of the church, you have this body of men that represent, you know, a wide range of giftedness with even in the pastoral and ruling elder office. And just to have them all looking at this man and, you know, ultimately determining that we do see Christ's gifts in this man and his call upon him, and then affirming that with not only their votes for a particular exam, but ultimately, as I did Sunday night, as I, of course, this wasn't for a pastoral, this was a ruling elder, but just laying, I was participating in ordination service, and there's just the solemnity of laying your hands on a man. You're, in a sense, you're taking responsibility for the setting him apart for that office and saying, I believe with my whole heart that this is one that you've established to labor in your church, O Lord. To me, that's just really beautiful. The place where I think we can improve, and I've seen, like in my former presbytery, I saw us moving in this direction. Just to give an example, is to improve on looking at a man's the whole of his life more fully rather than just his ability to answer theological or historical questions. So, for instance, it used to be in the personal godliness area, we would just bring a man up and ask him questions for 20, 30 minutes about what he thinks his personal godliness is like. Well, you know, that's bearing your own witness. So how that's improved is a couple of ways. One, there's a meeting with him privately by an examiner who really can get into the nitty-gritty of his life and things you might not want to talk about in a more public setting. There's references. So now instead of just hearing what this man says, they're asking other people in his life, family members or his pastor, other people giving reference regarding his personal godliness. So I think that that's very, very healthy. And I'd even like to see it maybe even more expanded. You know, one of the qualifications that is that he has a good reputation with those outside the church. So getting a reference from not just a pastor, but even a former employer and that type of thing, I think would be wise.
Mm-hmm. Well, something that resonated with me is I don't know that – isn't it a strange – I would think it'd be a strange thought. I'm thinking through some of just the people I work with and the churches they attend. I would think for a lot of those people, it would be a strange thought to think that, wait a minute, you got this guy you think should be a pastor. Why does he have to go before, like, you know, all these people and get validated? Why don't we just say, hey, you're our pastor? I mean, there's obviously a tremendous amount of wisdom in that, but just talk to that a little bit. Is that really the biblical way, or is that just no? This just seems like the wise way.
Well, I definitely believe it's biblical. Matter of fact, we've vowed to that we believe Presbyterianism is the biblical form of government, and there is indications in the Scripture of this very, very fact. Paul told Timothy not to neglect the gifts that were granted to him and confirmed by the laying on the hands of the presbytery. And they're mentioning a more regional body of people who verified that Timothy had the gifts. I think the whole area of ordination has, we've really lost the sense and the weight of it in so much of our contemporary American evangelicalism. So I know I've just come across so many men who call themselves pastors, but when you start really examining their lives a little bit or asking them some questions, it's almost a self-authentication to that to that office rather than a truly biblical and ecclesiastical confirmation of his gifts. So I think it's I think it's hugely important and really ties in with the chief mark of the church being the authoritative and faithful proclamation of God's word. And without a true sense of ordination, you lose that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would add to that. Well, I'd agree with everything Barry said. Having not grown up in a Presbyterian church, but growing up broadly evangelical, where you definitely were self-appointed to the ministry in many ways, when I first heard of Presbyterianism, immediately, this would have been 10 years ago now, I liked it. I liked Presbyterianism pragmatically. And I thought, well, out of all the things, out of all the damage I've seen in independent churches, congregational churches, Presbyterianism seems to have the most natural safeguards. Of course, it can't be infallible, but it seems to have the best safeguards to guard against some of those. But, in the last 10 years and probably even, quickly realizing and agreeing that, no, I think Presbyterianism is biblical. I was going to say the exact same reference that Barry did, that Paul tells Timothy, fan into the flame the gifts that you received through the laying on of hands of the elders, the council of elders, the presbytery. And so I think, and Paul shows such a concern in the pastoral epistles that the ministry really be passed on to qualified, competent, and tested men. And I think that Presbyterianism does the best job reflecting that spirit in the way, even though we don't do it perfectly. I think we are the biblical form that Christ and the apostles instituted. So,
hey, Austin, just one other thing I'd add to that is you don't see in the scriptures as the church is being established and expanded in the New Testament, men aren't sent. I mean, men are sent. They don't go out on their own authority, but they are sent. Paul and Barnabas were set apart, again, by prayer, fasting, laying on of hands by the church at Antioch. And even earlier, Jesus, he's the one that sent his disciples out, but he told them to wait until that was confirmed by the Holy Spirit. And even Jesus, he said, I didn't come on my own authority, but I was sent by my Father, and it was confirmed through the witness of the Spirit when he was baptized by John.
Well, it's funny because it wasn't too long ago. I have a good friend who he's in less just kind of a normal evangelical kind of independent church, and we were kind of discussing some of these things, and and he was like, I don't know. I don't know that it's necessarily all that important, or even, I mean, I guess I kind of see it in the Bible, but, and we talked about some of these things and challenges with them, some stuff, but he really was just like, I don't know. It just seems like you don't really need, this, other churches to be able to put their nose in your affairs. And it's like, that's kind of a pejorative way to put it, but whatever. I'm like, well, okay. Ironically, it was only just a few weeks later there was an issue that kind of erupted within that congregation, which led to him basically being nearly fired. and it just so happened to be another pastor in another denomination. Well, I'm sorry, it was a, kind of an association, but who basically came and stepped in and helped the situation. And I just can't help but think, I don't know, what say you now? in my mind, yes, there's obviously what the Bible says, through careful exegesis is what you want to do. But I just, even on a personal level, just the fruit of it has been so evident. When you can just have godly men that you can genuinely appeal to come in and just help with the situation where maybe people can't be objective or they maybe can't really quite get to the bottom of things. I just can't see how that isn't a good thing.
Right, right. And so many people don't value their own souls enough, I don't believe. You know, none of us would go to a doctor who hasn't been certified and examined and trained and all of those things to take care of their bodies. And yet we'll go to untrained men who aren't certified to take care of our souls. And again, I know God is able to go around normal structures at times and uniquely gift men. But that's not his, that's definitely not his normal way of operating. He uses means, and even a godly man who has gifts and outside certain structures should want that. We're helping a church in another nation in East Asia, and they are growing like wildfire. The churches are just growing. People are coming to know the Lord. But the thing that has touched them the most is to understand Presbyterianism. Matter of fact, I heard one report, one of our ministers went over there to teach on Presbyterianism, and as all these ministers heard about how Christ wants the church to be governed, they all began weeping. And we would think a lecture on church government would be one of the boring things, but these men just saw this was their real need. And I've had that confirmed by dealing with some men directly from that country, that this is the area they need so much help in, is how the church is to be structured, how people are to truly be to be shepherded. And one of my mentor ministers, Dr. Blackwood, always used to like to say, you know, we must do in the church, we must do Jesus's work, Jesus's way, that we've got to be so careful in the church to handle things according to the patterns and paradigms that Christ has given to us. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, this question is so vital to get right. Because if you don't, govern the church appropriately, people are going to get hurt. Stumbling blocks are going to be cast before people. And, you know, even more horribly, souls can be ruined. So it's very important.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And I can genuinely appreciate why someone would weep over seeing that, because it's so easy to weep over situations where you don't have that, because there's so much trouble often. Mm-hmm. Not always, right? Not always. I'm not trying to slam my congregationalist friends or anything like that. No, I mean, anything done with godly people can be done well, even if it isn't absolutely correct, right? But I don't know. It just seems like that is a major area of concern in the American church. That's
right.
That's my
and the form of government, you know, is ultimately no guarantee, because there are large Presbyterian bodies who are apostate, unfaithful. So you have to have the Spirit of the Lord at the heart of it all, and true faith in Christ. It can't be just I see some of that as just a mocking of the biblical system, because they're doing it in form, but the true substance of it's lacking. They're not really examining the men to make sure they have the Spirit of Christ in them. And so often it's because of natural gifts or positions in a community that they get put in the office of elder rather than their true ability to care and shepherd the people of God.